We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
12-year-old Lee Spencer is in the back seat of his family's car as it's pulling up the driveway of the house they are moving into. Lee notices a young girl looking at him from the upstairs window. No one else in the car sees her. This is the beginning of a 4-year journey of Lee Spencer's unbelievable events that happened in and outside of that house. Spencer's Ghosts, available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, any place you get your books. Available in paperback and ebook.
I'm Linda Maris, and my book is Hypocrisy versus Mysticism, Wisdom and Morality. It is about my paranormal phenomena and channeling the spirit of a provocative, influential comedian who unveils his past life journey and current spiritual state. If you are intrigued by the mysteries of life, the spirit realm, and personal growth, this book is a must-read. Step into the unseen. You are listening to Ghosts in the Valley with Al Cooley.
Hello and welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I have Holly Faust. Holly is a psychic medium, a writer, and so much more. I'll be right back with my conversation with Holly Faust right after these brief messages.
Do exorcisms intrigue you? Do you like scary urban legends? Are you fascinated with history and ghostly lore of haunted places? Well, if you answered yes to any of these, please check out Hauntingly Yours, a podcast for the paranormal. I'm your host, DC O'Rourke. I invite you to get together with me and the rest of our para family each and every week to hear haunting tales from across the globe. The show is available on all podcast players. Please do not forget to review and subscribe.
Okay, today on the show I have Holly Faust. Holly is a psychic medium, a writer, a podcast host, paranormal investigator, and she is also the founder, director, producer of the Dead Times Tale on YouTube. Hello and welcome to the Ghost in the Valley podcast, Holly.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Besides being a psychic medium, podcast host, writer, paranormal investigator, is there anything I left out? I mean,
I'm an interfaith minister, and I'm also a Reiki master teacher, and my favorite title is Mom and Mammy.
All right.
So
you say, when you say you're a Reiki master.
I actually got involved with Reiki, not so much to, it was actually before I became a minister. I actually got involved with it to kind of help my children. I have two children with autism. I was told, you know, that energy exchange can really help kids with autism to calm and self-regulate. So that's how I got involved with that.
Yeah, because I just got introduced to Reiki a couple of years ago. My sister's a Methodist minister, mm-hmm. and I thought, okay, you going to Reiki? I mean, I couldn't connect the two, but she says, you know, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I was actually introduced to it by Catholic nuns.
You know, you say there, you know, such a difference between spirituality and Christianity.
Yep.
Or, you know, and I can relate to that. You know.
Yep. And that's, you know, why my mom is Lakota. And we were raised Catholic because she was a, you know, child of residential school system, and she was assimilated into Catholicism. But my dad you know, his mother was from Ireland. They came over here. And so it was, you know, I was raised Catholic because of that. But with my grandmother, we were also introduced to the Lakota part of our lives. And as an adult, I became more entrenched as a Lakota, and practicing the indigenous spirituality. But then I also really became like touched by all faith. And that's why I got involved as an interfaith minister, because my feelings are is everybody holds a piece to the puzzle. And, you know, we all come together and work together, we might actually get the full picture.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Because, you know, as a child, we went on vacation and we came across an Indian reservation. Mm-hmm. And this old Indian, I swear to God, he's like 100 years old. He's sitting on the front porch, he's whittling. Then he was, and I'm like, what are you doing? And he was telling me how he's whittling an owl, you know, how important the owl was. Mm-hmm. And I'm only, what, 7 years old, maybe. And he's taking his coffee spoon and he was taking off a tin cup and just dripping the liquid back into the... I said, what are you doing? He says, I'm removing all the evil spirits out of the liquid. He says, everything has a spirit, you know, a living thing. It's like plants, animals, the ground. That's why they take the ground so serious, you know. And mm-hmm. And I'm like, I was just blown away by this old man. You know, so to this day, when I make my coffee tomorrow, I still bring that coffee or tea up out of the cup, and I let it drip back down, like maybe 2-3 inches above the cup, back into the cup. And finally, now I have my wife doing the same thing. I think probably people think we're crazy, but
I think people say that about us all the time because, you know, I grew up very much heavily involved with the Celtic faith. Because of my grandparents coming here from Ireland, and my grandfather constantly would share us the old Irish and Scottish stories and the old Celtic mythology. So for us, it wasn't so much picking it up and letting it drip, but it was stirring with intention. Mm-hmm. And you know, stirring clockwise and putting intention into our, you know, into our coffee or into our tea or whatever.
Why is everything clockwise? I mean, you know, even
when because you want to move forward, not backward.
Right, because we went into that tent for that Reiki session, you mm-hmm. gotta go in clockwise.
Yep, because you want to go forward, and if you go counterclockwise, you're going mm-hmm. backwards.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense, right?
Yep, yeah, and people don't realize it's something as simple as that, you know, can make an entire difference on something, you know, constantly mm-hmm. look at moving forward. And, you know, with the clock, it moves forward. You know, when we go the other way, we're turning things backwards, and we really don't want to go back.
No, get in the, I mean, you have so much in your resume here. I call it a resume.
Yeah. Jack of all trades is what my husband calls it.
Yeah. I'm looking at this and it's like, wow, man. It's like, you know, I'm impressed. I really am. Because I know it takes a lot to do every bit that I mentioned earlier, you know, to be running your own podcast. I know, cause I do mine, you know, and I know what mm-hmm. it takes to put them out and the dedication. If you really love doing what you're doing, you put the time and effort into it.
Exactly.
Know? And I'm looking at you being a writer and a psychic medium. We're going to get into all that. Let's start with your paranormal investigations.
Yep.
Are you currently on a team or have you had a
team? I am currently on a team and I have my own team.
Oh, okay.
I do spirituality and occult research for the Phantom Detectives LLC. They're based out of Delaware, Philadelphia area. And then I have my own local team in the Central Susquehanna River Valley here in PA, and it's called Talking to the Dead Paranormal. And so, you know, I do kind of help the leader of Phantom Detectives a lot with research and, you know, an understanding of spirituality and working with clients on their own spiritual level and not bringing in their beliefs, but actually working with the clients where they're comfortable at. So if they're Catholic clients, working with them as Catholics, if they're Protestants, working with them that way, if they're Jewish, you know, just working with them at their own level and not bringing in something strange to them. And then my team, we're small but mighty. It's new because I had previously been with a team for probably, oh my gosh, I think at least 15 years. And I left because I just didn't feel that it was in the realm of the way I wanted to work anymore. So I left and took some time off and met Joshua from Phantom Detectives. And he lifted me up so much that I got the courage to start my own team.
And where do you do most of your investigations at?
We're in central PA, central Pennsylvania, like we're about an hour east of State College.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're like the central Susquehanna River Valley, they call us. We're right along the Susquehanna River.
So if somebody was to contact you or me about your investigations, would you be willing to travel?
Oh, yeah, I've traveled all the way to Iowa.
Oh, okay.
if it's a good enough case, and if it's something that I can't do, I have a lot of connections in the field that I'm sure I could find somebody that would fit in with what that those people were looking for.
So how many like are on the team? I mean, total.
Right now, my team, personally, I have 3 to 4, depending upon the day. I'm slowly gaining more as I'm meeting people because I'm picky. Mm-hmm. You know, I want people that are going to come in and understand that my theory is always debunk, debunk, debunk mm-hmm. before you go to the paranormal or supernatural. You know, it, and I kind of mix science with psychic. So, you know, we do use some tools, but then we also use our intuition and the reads. And I'm very heavy in research.
I was just going to get into that, you know, like how important is the research? How important is the history of the building or the person you're investigating?
To me, it's very important. Especially like if you're looking at like our area, it was highly indigenous. The Susquehannock tribe was all along this area here. And so we don't know like where their burial mounds were, where anything was, because when they came in and they took over this area, yeah, they just started building. The fort was built along the river because it was easy access. And, you know, so we don't know where people were at the time they were burying people, where, you know, any of that was done. So we don't know if the homes are on top of mounds, you know, but we do know that there's a lot of activity. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it can be traced back. But I also look at the not only the history of the home, but the history of the land.
Right.
The way we were taught is you have one person do the research, but don't allow them to share that research with anybody until after the investigation.
Oh, okay.
To verify anything, like especially if you have people that are very intuitive, you want to be able to verify what they're getting, and you don't want to possibly falsely feed them information.
Yeah, I've had some other psychic mediums on the show before, and it's interesting how everybody is different. Some say they don't want to know because they want to go with a clean slate.
Yep.
You know, so they're not polluted with whatever the legend is or what other investigators said, you know.
Right.
And others want to know, you know. So it's, I guess, to whatever you're most comfortable
yep.
with.
And that's in it. And it's like every other person, like everybody has their own. For me, I'm most comfortable. I like to be tested. I like to have my abilities tested. So I like to go to locations completely blind. And I do a lot of psychometry, which is touching objects and reading them and getting impressions off of them. So I like to, you know, do a lot of that. I'm a very touchy-feely psychic.
Because, you know, sometimes being a psychic medium, you can go in there and I believe it helps you with your investigation. Mm-hmm. I mean, of all the teams I've talked to that has a psychic on their team, a medium on their team, it helps them with a different angle to look at things. And like you said, you know, not all places are haunted. I agree 100%. I've never had my own team, but I helped others on their team. And I'm just looking back on everybody had a different gift mm-hmm. to bring to the table, you know. And I had a team on there that had atheist, preacher, psychic medium. I mean, it was so diverse. And it was like, you bring everything to the table and it's really cool when everything comes together.
Yep. And that's how the team that I was with for a long time, we had, you know, pagans, we had, you mm-hmm. know, Christians, we had non-believers, you know, it was, and I think we all did bring something. And I thought that's what made us unique is that we weren't going in and hammering at just one aspect. And that's where I truly like really started learning about the importance of working with my client's spirituality and not forcing my beliefs onto them, like coming into their house and bringing a rabbi with me when they're, you know, need a priest.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, do you think, and I've asked this 100 times to other guests, you know, do you believe your gifts is a curse or a blessing or a little of both?
Yeah, I would say it just depends on the day of the week. Mm-hmm. And what, because for a long time, I had difficulty shutting it off. I would get constant dreams. I've had, and I still have it happen where I wake up in the middle of the night and someone's standing over me and I'm like, okay, where did you come from and who do you belong to? I had to learn how to create safe spaces for myself to kind of mellow out and not deal with the constant onslaught, because I can walk into a room and I can feel everybody's emotions and it becomes extremely overwhelming for me that, you know, I start getting anxious and agitated. I have extreme anxiety. So and a lot of that is reading and off of other people.
Yeah, I've had a past guest on, and I'm not going to mention her name, but she was saying that, like, when the rest of the team goes home, they're done. They can look at their equipment and look at their readings and this and that. Since she's a psychic medium, you know, what's in her head, you know, stays with her. And then when she goes, like you're saying, when you go to sleep, like she said, there was a one incident where the little girl didn't know she was dead.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, she helped move her, I don't know how I'll say it, she moved her on, but she helped the young girl, and it just broke her heart that not only did you know that the young girl died the way she died, you know, but then she had to relive that all over again.
And that girl, is hard.
And the young girl had to relive that over again, you know, so yeah. She says, and that bothered her. So she, yeah, that part she doesn't like, yep. You know, but it, and then, but then in the end, she helped her.
Right. And that, to me, like, my biggest issue has always been I have what they call precognitive dreams. So I dream about things before they happen. I was working with the team and my boss had some issues, you know, with drugs. And I had a dream of him laying dead in a ditch. And that stayed with me. And I was so fearful. And I was like, you know, like, you need to get help. You know, this is what's going to happen to you. This, if you keep down this path, this is where you're going to be. And, you know, it's scary because it when is. You see stuff like that and you want to help people, that a lot of times they don't want to hear it, or they're, oh, you're crazy, you know. And so that for the longest time was very difficult. You know, I had the experience in Gettysburg. I had spent time at the orphanage in Gettysburg. And went back to our hotel, and I had, like, kids playing all over our room all night. You know, I thought maybe I was just imagining it, but my friend, who has no abilities whatsoever, said, did you hear those kids running around all night? And I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know why they came back with us, but, yeah, they decided they liked us, so.
Gettysburg seems to be very active.
Very. It's one of my favorite places.
We were there, my wife and I. We had a great time. Went on a ghost walk there and just loved the whole thing. I loved the battlefields, was touching, moving.
Yes.
It's, you know, it is. Yeah, I encourage anybody that hasn't been there to go there.
Oh, yeah. I always tell people, like, you know, everybody else wants to go to Disney World. If I have a place that I could pick that I could, it's Gettysburg. Gettysburg and, believe it or not, Salem, Massachusetts are like my Disney Worlds.
Now, would you prefer to go to, like, a site that's not as big as, say, the Lizzie Borden House, or, you know, or would you rather go to, like, a some place that hasn't been investigated, is not well known?
I like to do a healthy mix, because I have been to a lot of, you know, bigger locations like West Virginia Penitentiary, you know, the Bel Air House in Maryland. You know, I've been to some of those more larger ones. But now this, on the 26th of this month, I'm actually doing a private location that has never been investigated before.
It just seems to me like, you know, your bigger places like Bel Air, you know, that Lizzie Borden, and all these places seem like they've, it's the same thing. I mean,
well, Lizzie Borden, I've never been there. Mm-hmm. I had wanted to go there, but I have not gotten an opportunity. But I can honestly say Bel Air House, I want to go back, but at the same time, I don't, because I got very ill there.
You think it's because of the activity there?
I do. Mm-hmm. I was fine the minute I walked out of the house.
Oh, okay.
Inside the house, I was sick. Outside of the house, on the road, away from it, I was fine. But on the opposite side of the house, because there was also stuff that happened next door, and it wasn't so much paranormal, but it was really bad criminal stuff that happened over there. So I couldn't go out the back door because I would feel what happened over there. But now I've been told that house was torn down. But I still think there's an there would be an impression there still, unless it's been cleansed. And then the house itself. And then I literally, as long as I walked across the road and got away, I was okay. But I did not like being in that house. I wanted to go back to the prison. You know, way back when, you know, they, I don't really know, did they move cemeteries or did they just, you know, move stones?
I know they moved, like I went to Erie Cemetery. If the cemetery is built in, say, 1850 and you see a headstone there, or 1799, how did that happen? I mean, it wasn't resurrected until 1850.
Right.
And I was talking to the lands people there and they were telling me, the groundskeepers on me. That's because if a family came in, they want to bring another family member in. They just move them from another cemetery or their family plot, you know. Problem is, if you don't bring that whole body.
Right.
And that's what he was saying.
You know? I've seen that because we were down in South Carolina. We went to Lake Marion. And now Lake Marion, it was a town underneath that lake that they just flooded out. And from what I understand, there is a cemetery under that lake.
Mm-hmm.
Flooded it out.
Man-made lakes, they tear down houses, cemeteries, mm-hmm. Or they'll just put the lake over top. They don't even dig the bodies up.
Yeah, and that's what they did. They didn't do anything. Like, I think there's, like, you can literally see, like, pieces of buildings and stuff sticking out when you're going around. Like, you have to be careful when you're out there on a boat because you can run into a tree.
Right. Have you ever been on an investigation where you just didn't feel safe?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've had a couple of them. There was a home that, a mansion in Uniontown, PA, out near Pittsburgh that we used to do lessons, classes at, paranormal classes. And I wasn't allowed to stay in that house alone because I had so many bad experiences when I was alone in the house. Or, you know, even just being sometimes with another person, you know, I had something actually jump me and speak through me. In the house, and it was like the most frightening thing. Like when we listened back to the recording, it sounded like diabolical.
Anything like evil or demonic spirit.
Yeah, it was very, like, we don't know if it was evil or demonic. We don't know if it was just something, but it sounded like, I always tell everybody that, like, if you ever seen Lord of the Rings, it sounded like that little golem from Lord of the Rings. Instead of saying, my shiny, it was saying, I've got her.
Paranormal investigations is like fishing.
Yeah, it really is.
You'll either catch a lot of fish or you're not going to get nothing at all.
I've sat in locations for hours, sometimes 2-3 days and got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And or then they, other or, times, everything.
Or they pick and choose who they want to connect with.
Yep. And I've seen that. Like, we had a couple of people that would go with us that we literally said they were like rock. Nothing would happen when they were around. But the minute they walked out of the building, everything would happen.
Now, do you believe a spirit can cling to you and you can move it to another destination?
I have a twofold belief in that sense, because I do believe some of them have already gone where they needed to go and chose to come back. But I worked with a team years and years ago that did what they would call a soul release. They actually worked with a pastor who helped write prayers and stuff. And I believe that you can, if they want to move on. You can help guide them. Yeah, especially ones that don't know that they've died. You know, that's the hardest for me when you're talking with an entity or a spirit that doesn't realize that they passed away, and you have to get them to understand that they're no longer in existence in the flesh level.
Yeah, it's like I was talking about earlier about the medium though that had a problem with the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
See, she was so asking for her mother. Where's her mom? Where's mommy? Well, mommy's dead. That's how she got her to, do you want to go see mommy? You know,
right.
So you want to be with her. Yeah, she did. So she didn't know that mom was gone she was gone.
Well, and I've seen, like, from my research and things that I've done, a lot of times when someone dies suddenly, well before they're supposed to, especially like when you think of battlefields and things like that, a lot of those, you know, they don't realize that they were killed and they're still reliving that over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe you can move a spirit on?
I think you can. I've been a part of a team that would do what, like I said, like they would do soul releases and help. Mm-hmm. But I think I was only ever around once when they did that. And I don't know if anything moved on or not. You know, I didn't get a feeling of any change in the environment around us, but, you know, it was something that they would do at different, you know, especially private homes where people didn't want these things to stay around. And, you know, the more research I did, you know, I started explaining to them, well, sometimes, you know, they're not going to leave. You know, you're going to have to really stand your ground and learn how to work together.
Yeah, years ago, I made a documentary called Ghosts in the Valley, same as my podcast. That's why I named my podcast after my documentary. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to the priest, and I think he's going to think I'm crazy making this paranormal documentary. He was all into it, man. It's like he was excited about it.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, but it seems like in Catholicism, they're more willing to grasp on to the belief in the supernatural and paranormal.
And he always was telling me, you know, just be careful out there. Number one, you don't want to provoke. Yep. You want to grab something. You don't know what you're doing. Don't do it. And there's a thin line between a demon and a regular spirit. You know, there's a thin line there.
Right.
So be careful, you know, but I find it very rare in my cases, I'll come across demons or.
See, like I always say, if a person was miserable and mean in life, they're going to be the same way in death. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know, you know, from having worked with people, like that was the team that I was with for a very long time, that they did a lot of those cases to rule out, you know, for the church with exorcism and deliverances and whatnot. We learned that, you know, those are like less than 1% of all hauntings can be deemed as demonic. But when you find one, you'll never forget it.
Right, right. Now, what's your favorite piece of equipment that you like to use in an event? If you're, when you're not doing your,
that's what I was going to say. Besides me. Yeah. I actually just got into, it's not a REM pod, but it works like a REM pod and it has crystals on top of it. It's called a crystal pod. And I just actually started getting into that. Before I was like totally anti any kind of technological stuff. Mm-hmm. But in the last year, because my child has gotten interested in investigating with me, I've gotten a spirit box, which I love. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten the REM pod. And then the girl that made this crystal pod, she also makes a pod called a seer pod, which I believe recognizes static electricity. So they kind of like work together. I have that, but I do say like the crystal pod, I really have gotten, and I think it's because it's purple and it's crystals and it lights up purple. Yeah. And yeah, I love things that light up. So if it has like lights or sounds on it, I follow cat balls. Like, you know, like I'm a child or I'm a cat. I'll chase them down a hallway.
Don't want to keep harping on this medium that was on the show, but she was telling me, speaking of everything lighting up, mm-hmm. All say her whole team, everything was lit up talking to this young girl, everything was lit up. And when she moved the girl on, you know, just imagine everything in that room just stopping. Got to keep in mind these spirits that you're investigating were once people.
Mm-hmm.
They're living beings. They were once walking disorder. They were real people.
Respect is a huge thing. We should always treat whatever these things are, you know, whether they're, you know, human spirits or land-based spirits, the way we want them to treat us. Because, you know, if you have a grumpy, cranky, miserable spirit, like who knows, maybe that person was being harped on or provoked
right.
multiple times before.
Let's move on to what got you interested into the paranormal in the first place.
I always had an interest from the time I was young, because I started seeing things at an early age. And I can't remember what year it was, but I remember I lived not far from Pittston, Pennsylvania, where the Smurl haunting occurred. I remember my local news and watching, and Ed and Lorraine Warren were standing on the porch talking to our local news reporters about this diabolical haunting. And I remember seeing that and I was just like, oh my goodness, there's people out here that do that for, and I was young when that happened because I was born in 74. So I might not have been very old, but I just remember thinking there's people that do that. Like they go and look for like these things. And I became obsessed with learning everything I could. And I did turn my gifts off for a very, very long time because I got a lot of feedback from like my mom was very uncomfortable with it. And, you know, she thought I was possessed and she tried to have me exercised and, you know, all of the things. So I kind of squashed it and for a very long time till I was in my 20s. But when I was around 19 or so, a very close friend of mine committed suicide. And I was told because of his sexuality and because of him committing suicide, he could never get into heaven. And he was bound to either go to hell or walk the earth for the rest of his days. And I said, that doesn't sound right for me. And that's when I met and started investigating because I wanted those answers. And, you know, I wanted to know what. And then, you know, when my gifts came through again, like they busted out, he was actually one of the people I was able to communicate with. And he's still with me. And he still, you know, interacts with my family. He's a trickster. He was like that in life. He loved playing jokes on people. You know, we had an overweight boy in our house who I woke up in the morning and he was sitting on the couch shaking immensely, surrounded by cookbooks. And I'm like, what the heck are you doing all night? He said, I didn't do nothing. Those flew off your bookshelf at me. And I knew right away what had happened. Another time my daughter was in the shower and she was getting hit with soap, blaming it on my other two kids who were sitting right in front of me. When we had gone to a seance and my friend came through, I said, did you throw soap at Beck in the shower? And the table started going crazy. And I just like, yeah, I kind of figured that's who it was. So, yeah. And so that was like my whole journey started because of his death. I mean, it's still hard for me to like deal with. It was like one of the most traumatic things that ever happened to me because he was supposed to be with me shopping when it happened. And I was so angry because he stood me up and then went home to find out what had happened. Mm-hmm. So it took me a long time to really get past that and to just grasp the point that he's the reason why I'm where I'm at right now, you know, because of his death.
When you're growing up, well, for me as a child, and you're talking about, you know, like being accepted, mm-hmm. Because you're not accepted because you're different. You weren't allowed to even speak paranormal or anything like that in church because you're going to go to hell.
Yep.
You're going to burn in hell. And I think a lot of times these old pastors, I think they ruined a lot of people. As far as if you're like this, you're going to go to hell. If you're like this, you're going to go to, you know.
Right.
So either they're going to lock you up for being crazy, yeah, or drunk.
They'll lock you up for sure.
So I had an interest in the paranormal ever since I was 12 years old and grew up in that house.
And I think that for me, the house that I grew up in was actually a meeting hall for the KKK. The whole attic, it was a three family, like almost like a row home, but not really a row home. It looked like a big old barn. But there was three apartments and then a basement apartment. But our apartment had access to the attic. And the attic was the whole length. And up there, there was a huge stage. And there were all these signs like, Jesus, come to us. There were, you know, secret passageways and stuff that would lead to other parts of the building. And I remember my dad could not sleep on the side of the bed that faced that door, because he would literally see them coming down out of the attic after him. You know, but my mom, when she would, never had a problem. And we would always say it's because she never had anything paranormal ever happen to her. You know, they even had a closet in that room that had at one time had a secret passage that came out into that closet, but there was no power, no electricity, nothing in there, but it would literally glow. So much to the point that the neighbor boys across the road said to my brother and sister, what was glowing in your mom and dad's room last night? And they were like, nothing. There, you know, where that window is, that's the closet. There's no lights in there. You know, they said, well, that closet was glowing all night. You know, like as kids, like my mom would brush it off. And it was probably, you know, headlights from the cars in the streets. But my dad was afraid. And I never experienced anything like that until I went to stay with my mom when my dad was passing. And I slept up in that room. And I literally saw them coming down. And I was like, yep, nope, I'll never sleep up there again.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you know, you say about debunking. I totally agree with that. Is you can debunk a house. That, mm-hmm. Somebody might say think it's haunted, but it is a clanging of the pipes, or it's a branch hanging outside the house, or it's a car going down the road, the headlights are going across the shadow going across the room.
Yep.
You can rule out all of that, right? But my case and my dad, when we would try to tell him that, you know, there's a ghostly young girl outside the door, it's not a shadow. It's not a headlight.
Right.
You know, and he it's steps a person. If you have carpeted steps and you're steps are clanging coming up them steps or stomping up them steps, you know, it's bam, 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 in the four years we lived there. So, yeah, I can understand, you know, the people, like you said, your mom, she never had that experience. So it might be harder for her to understand what's going on.
I always tell people, you know, like people, well, I've never, and I'm like, well, you'll know when you experience it. I had a gentleman, I was out in Iowa at Malvern Manor. We were running an event there and we were doing a seance up in the attic. And I had a gentleman that was a big 200 plus pound cop. So totally, I don't believe in the paranormal. You know, I could feel him because he was right next to me and I could feel his like hand going further and further away from me. And I wasn't really, I was paying attention to everybody around me, and but they were recording it in another room. So there were people watching it on camera, and I guess he literally got like lifted up and moved out of the circle into like this window. He stood up and he freaked out and he like, you know, he was out of there. Like he messaged me like all the way home when we were traveling back to PA. Because he didn't know what to do. He had never, and you know, he was a cop and he was always logical and he never experienced anything like that before. And he was totally freaked out by it. And he became a believer in the paranormal that weekend, you know, which I was like amazing.
You know, the people that would question everything you're saying, I never experienced that. I don't know if I believe that. You're like, you're non-believers. That's cool. Yeah. You know, I don't expect everybody to believe. But what was like kind of ironic was they're the ones that stayed around the longest because they had questions. So I think you don't want to say, I don't believe, because it might be right there.
Well, and I think a lot of skeptics, like I always tell people, I'm a healthy skeptic. I used to believe everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to want to go in, everything was paranormal. And I've learned through the 30 odd years I've been doing this that it's not. And it's okay to be a healthy skeptic. It's okay to go in there with the skeptic. I want to be proven. I want you to prove to me that X, Y, and Z are happening, because I don't want to go in there and say, oh yeah, you've got ghosts, when it could just be something as simple as maybe there's a slow carbon monoxide leak.
Right. Most of your Catholic priests that do exorcisms, they have to go in and rule out schizophrenia.
Oh yeah.
Or a mental illness. They can't go right in there and say,
we had a huge checklist of things that we had to rule out before we could definitely say, yes, we need to turn this over. Mm-hmm. You know, we did psychological, we did physical, we did, you know, all different types of, and then spending time in the location and actually seeing the activity and recording the activity for proof of the activity. Yeah, people think, oh, you just go in and you get a priest to come. No, it is, if it's a true, you know, case, there is a regimented, you know,
they're very regimented on how they handle that, and it's not an easy thing to do. And I would always encourage people to bring in the people that know how to handle that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Like I always say, like, I don't do that anymore. However, I'm sure because we were taught. You know, because as I got older, I actually have an opportunity to meet Lorraine after Ed passed and mentor with her for a while. We were always taught that once you encounter that, it always remembers you. You know, it may come back again. It may, you know, and so you always have to be prepared for that. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't, you know, in the knock on wood, the, you know, few years that I've been away from that particular group, I haven't encountered it again. And I hope to never encounter it again, but it's something I'll never forget. It's like inside of me, like it's seeing someone, you know, when you're trying to say a simple prayer like the Our Father and watching as scratches are appearing on their back, you know, and there's nobody doing it. You're literally praying over them and you could see their scratches develop, or the diabolical smile that the person exhibited and the knowledge that they were able to tell us that they shouldn't have had knowledge of.
Right.
You know, and I will never forget it. And I hope to never, ever encounter it again.
Or speak a language you never
spoke before.
Yeah. Right. And speak it fluently.
Yeah.
You know, I want to get into, before our time runs out, I want to get into your show, The Dead Time Tales. I like that. I like that name. That's very catchy. I like that.
Yeah, well, the team that I was a part of for a very long time, we always called, you know, our investigative time, Dead Time. So for me, it made a lot of sense to just say Dead Time Tales, because I think a lot of the stuff that I'm sharing isn't just paranormal. I have a huge fascination with urban legends, a lot with true crime. and how true crime and urban legends cross over into the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
So I do interview like some investigators. I've done an interview on how investigators can protect themselves and not leave pieces of themselves behind. And, you know, I've interviewed someone from Gettysburg and we've had some great conversations about that. But I'm also doing some shows on my own where I'm talking about, I did a lot of research into a true crime case that we have here in our area that happened on a mountain. So it actually has a woman in white story that goes with it. So, and I actually got interested in the woman in white story, and through doing my research, found out that an actual crime can be traced back to that location. You know, for me, sharing that little bit too, some education when I can, because I'm all about trying to teach the younger and newer investigators.
Is anything paranormal come on your show? Like just ghosts and spirits, and or do you do also like Bigfoot?
UFO. Oh, no, I'm all into cryptids. I have a Bigfoot girl coming on next week. Right. One of my closest friends that lives, like a good friend of mine that lives not too far from me. She's a big Bigfoot researcher. Uh-huh. We have a couple miles from our house. We have a big Central PA cryptid and Bigfoot festival. I'm obsessed with cryptids. I have a fascination with Mothman. We were in West Virginia to go to the penitentiary. We drove, I think it was like 3 hours or 4 hours to go to Point Pleasant. So I go touch Mothman's shiny hiney.
Yeah. And I'm doing that this year.
My gosh. Yeah. I loved it. There's a restaurant there that actually serves a Mothman pizza. So you get the pizza and the way they put the toppings on, it looks like Mothman.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And I'm very much into cryptids, aliens, you know, the town I grew up in. Well, not I grew up, but my mother, when my mom was like, pretty much it happened in November. She had me in December. So she's like almost 9 months pregnant for me. They had a UFO crash and they just had a 50 year anniversary festival for it. They called it the Carbondalian.
Where's that? You know,
Carbondale, PA. This cool. one was a 50th anniversary of it, like, and they all of a sudden decided to celebrate it. And, you know, my great grandmother saw it happen. You know, my mom was up climbing the mountain trying to see where it crashed. And it, you know, so I grew up with those stories my whole life. And it was great because the girl that was running the festival, I actually got to share those stories with her that my great grandmother, my grandmother and my mother had shared with me, you mm-hmm. know, and, like, and especially being native, like a lot of our folklore, are part of the cryptid and, you know, and alien fields. Like my husband is a big alien guy, you know, and he talks about, you know, he had experiences of floating out of his bedroom as a child. He has scars that he never had injuries in those locations. And so, yeah, him and I, like, he's not a big ghost believer. So we kind of like throw jabs back and forth at each other. Go play with your ghosts, and I'll be like, go play with your aliens. And so, yeah, so and it's all fun because, like, he's totally supported me. Yeah, we'll be married 25 years, and he's never, you know, wavered in supporting like my need for answers. And that's why I've done so much, because I can't sit still. I have to constantly be engaging my intellect, and, you know, I'm a constant learner. Cryptid, I can get into. I haven't done a ton on like ufology and what do they say, IEDs now? Or I can't remember what they call them now, but UFOs.
UAPs.
They're always going to be UFOs to me.
Yeah, me too.
So yeah, it's gonna. I think it's gonna be difficult to break those of us that have been doing this for so long and have always known it as UFOs. But I'm always intrigued by, like, I was one of those big Area 51 people. Like, I want to go to Area 51. And, you know, my husband, my mother lived in Arizona, and he brought her back home to PA when her partner died. And they were literally right there in Area, driving by Area. And I was so angry. But what was really odd is, and in that area, it snowed while they were traveling. Like, they literally got snow in Area 51 and they had to pull over for the night. I'm like a big into like Project MK Ultra and all of that stuff too. And that's stuff that I also am going to probably get into a little bit, because my kids got me into conspiracy. And, you know, I do a lot of research into it. And I know, like, when you think about it, like the MK Ultra was literally paranormal. When you think about, like, I spent time at the Ryan Institute and they talk a lot about that remote viewing. Is part of, you know, a psychic gift. So that really intrigued me, how we had this whole experiment going on with remote viewers, you know, and they were literally trying to view things, especially during like different aspects of the different wars and whatnot.
Get into your book, My Journey Out of the Darkness. What's that about?
That is my journey in the beginning of my paranormal career. Talks a little bit about how I got involved, why I got involved, and the things that I experienced very in my youth part of my career. It actually talks about my first encounter with something diabolical or demonic and, you know, the repercussions it had for me and my body going into it, not knowing what I was dealing with. It's kind of like a little bit of a warning to people, like, be careful.
Oh, yeah.
Of what you're, and for me, it was written more so if it could help people to understand, you know, being haunted in the paranormal. That was what the biggest aspect of that book was about. And I'm hoping now I'm want to eventually write a continuation of it, because that was written so many years ago. And a lot has happened in my life since that book was finished.
Is that available on paperback and ebook?
Yes, it's on Kindle and it's in paperback.
And Amazon?
Yep, Amazon. And I believe, last I knew, it was also Barnes & Noble online.
Mm-hmm. You have another book out too, you said?
Yes, it's called The Witch's Book of Things. And that's for people that, you know, want to get involved in the magical community. It's kind of like, I always call it a beginner's grimoire or a book of shadows. It was a book I developed, believe it or not, because of witch talk. People were getting a lot of bad information off of TikTok in the beginning from, you know, people that really shouldn't have been giving them information on witchcraft. So I sat down. I had enough followers that I could go live on TikTok at the time. I sat down and spent a week writing and would have people coming in and out of my room. And I'd be like, well, if there's one thing you wanted to know, what would it be? So it like gets into like candle magic. It gets into moon magic. It gets into all the different phases of different like things that beginners should know, even down to a little bit of beginner herbalism.
And what do you have coming up?
I have my parenting children with special needs and special gifts. That is one that I'm hoping to have done within the next month or so. I want to have it done by May at the latest to share in Pennhurst at the Paracon there. And I'm also writing another of my Witch's Book of series, and it's going to be the Witch's Book of Herbs, which is all about herbs and magical and medicinal uses of herbs. Another one that I'm writing, I'm doing three at the same time, which is because my brain is all over the place. I'm writing a book about the little hidden things in the paranormal that nobody ever wants to talk about, the sexism, the racism, you know, a lot of the problems within the community. And that's a book that comes close to my heart because I experienced, you know, both sexism and racism in a lot of unlikely places. And I think it's so important for us to address it so we can learn how to work together and be more welcoming in the field.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I'm going to put your links at the bottom of this episode. It was totally my pleasure having you on the show, Holly.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. I enjoyed it, too. I'll be at Pennhurst this year, and I'm also planning on being in Gettysburg at the Battlefield Bash. Thank you.
Please check out Holly's book, My Journey Out of the Darkness, available on Amazon and any place else you get your books. Thank you, Holly, very much. I know we'll talk again in the future. Stay tuned for some exciting announcements next week, and I'll see you in 2 more weeks on Ghost in the Valley podcast.